All right. Well, former Egyptian leader Hosni Mubarak has reportedly taken refuge in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt, a place where he owns so much property, get this, Celeste, the locals call it Mubarak land.
It doesn't really trip off the tongue, though.
Well, maybe it does in
Mubarak
Arabic.
Land.
So it begs the question, where, aside from Sharm el-Sheikh and the properties, where is Mubarak's fortune, and what are the chances of it ever being recouped? And for that matter, if you are an international dictator, a kleptocrat, where do you go to hide your money? There are people who know how to answer these questions. One such person, Nicholas Shaxson, he works for the Tax Justice Network, and he is author of Treasure Islands, Tax Havens, and the Men Who Stole the World. Nicholas, good morning.
Good morning.
First off the top, we've had a lot of numbers flying around, as low as 40, as high as $100 billion. How much is Hosni Mubarak worth?
Well, these numbers tend to be the amount of money that they're calculated based on the amount of money that's estimated to have been looted out of the country. But I think only a relatively small proportion of that would probably end up being actually the property of Hosni Mubarak and his close family. The reason is generally that when you have countries like that, oil-producing countries where there's a lot of corruption, you have the exercise of power tends to be a very expensive business. You have to keep doling out favors. You have to keep doling out money to your supporters in order to keep them sweet. So I suspect that this is no way to minimize the amount of money that will have been looted out of Egypt. It will be very, very large, tens of billions of dollars, certainly, possibly more than that in the last 10 years or so. But I think probably a lot of that will be quite reasonably widely dispersed among an elite in Egypt, among a fairly tight-knit elite who all know each other. But I think, Hosni Mubarak himself will probably have a relatively small amount of that. I mean, nobody really knows, but my guess is single-digit billions, probably very low billions is what I would guess.
Is that all?
I really don't know.
That okay. Still seems like a lot, though.
Even if it's $8 billion, $9 billion, or up to 10 now, Nicholas Shaxson, you are speaking to us from Zurich, Switzerland, correct?
I am indeed.
All right. Yes. Now, Switzerland was the first country, and of course the famous international banking country, to say they had frozen Hosni Mubarak's assets. So it seems like the old sort of formula of if you're a dictator or a looter, as you said, and you want to just stash your assets, you put them in a Swiss bank account and nobody can get to them. Now you're calling us from Switzerland. It seems like that's no longer the case. Where do you hide your money these days?
I think people are still stashing their money in Switzerland. The question is, why has Switzerland got all this money in the first place? What happens is that Switzerland tends to ask very few questions. They allow structures to be created where you don't know the origin of the money. A lot of the money is still coming into Switzerland. Switzerland is estimated to hold hundreds of billions of dollars of untaxed dirty money from around the world. It's only when there's a very, very high-profile case like Hosni Mubarak that you get the political will emerges to actually do something about it. But the fact is that there is an awful lot of this money, and quite possibly some of Hosni Mubarak's in Switzerland. And the question has to be asked, why did Switzerland allow it in the first place?
Well, that's a good question, Nicholas. But another question for you is, when have we successfully recovered? When has any country ever successfully recovered a large amount of money that a dictator or former leader has looted from a country they've ruled?
Well, there have been cases in the past. There has been money repatriated. There is, for example, the very corrupt Nigerian leader Sani Abacha, who is a very sort of repressive character, very high profile. Switzerland repatriated about $700 million of his. There was also about $600-700 million of Ferdinand Marcos of the Philippines. So there has been money repatriated by Switzerland. I think in total over the last 15 years, it's about $1.7 billion. And that adds up. There's a worldwide total figure of about $5 billion of this kind of dirty money worldwide, of countries, including Switzerland, that have repatriated this over the 15 years.
It's not nothing, but it doesn't sound like a lot.
Sums of money that are flooding out of developing countries, out of these places. This is still an absolute trickle. This is a drop in the ocean. Global Financial Integrity in Washington recently issued a report estimating that in 2008 alone, there was $1.2 trillion, US dollars, in illicit financial flows coming out of developing countries. So when you put this figure of $5 billion over 15 years into that perspective, you see it's absolutely a drop in the ocean.
Yeah. Nicholas, I'm going to put on my dictator hat here, my tall international kleptocrat hat, maybe some epaulets or a military uniform. I'm a dictator. I probably don't have, you know, a bunch of dollar sacks in the basement of my palace, right? It's a little more complex than that. Where do I want to go these days? Where do I want to hide my money? What do I want to do to make sure that people like you don't get to me?
Yes, well, you're quite right. This is not about somebody walking in, somebody with dark sunglasses and a funny hat, walking into a bank in Switzerland or somewhere else with a stash of money. It's done much more in much more sophisticated ways these days. What will tend to happen is what you will want to have your assets. You will want to be owning property. If you're stashing it overseas, you'll want to be owning property, whatever you fancy, yachts, paintings, and, of course, money in bank accounts. And you'll want to probably want to have that money in places where you will feel comfortable visiting, comfortable living. So we are talking Switzerland is obviously one destination. It is clearly historically a favored destination.
Now, is that so if I get exiled, I can still go to a place where I have a palace or a villa?
It's partly that, but it's also partly because your family members are going to want to go there on shopping trips and going to want to sort of hang out in places that where they like being. So,
naturally.
Of course, the United States is a big destination. The United Kingdom, London, is a huge favorite. So these are the sorts of places where significant sums are likely to be. Paris, France, of course, a lot of dictators like sending their family members on shopping trips.
Sure.
So, but what will happen, these assets, this money and these properties and so on will not be held in the name of the person. This will not have the name H. Mubarak on them. What will happen is that they will create a series of legal structures around the world. They might be through offshore trusts. They might use offshore companies with nominee directors and offshore bank accounts. And they will tend to link these things up in a whole complex chain of structures straddled
lots and lots of shadows and dust, right, Nicholas? All right, Nicholas Shackson, thanks for joining us. He's calling us from Zurich, Switzerland. Nicholas is author of Treasure Islands, Tax Havens, and The Men Who Stole the World. Plenty of kleptocrats out there. Suharto, Mobutu Sese Seko, maybe Hosni Mubarak gets to join them.
Maybe Todd Zwillich.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.